This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Hey, how are you today? I'm glad you're here because today you're going to get to meet David Sitella. David is the owner and CEO of an agency called Clix Marketing. And it's one of the few agencies that specializes exclusively in pay-per-click. And we've worked ahead of time to do a show for you today on, of course, David Sitella, but also on pay-per-click. We've made up this thing, David and I, called the 10-cylinder engine. The idea that a pay-per-click campaign can't run if you only do one or two or three or four things. There are actually 10 things that you need to know to have a very effective PPC campaign. That includes customer segmentation, keyword research, the architecture of the campaign, aggregating things into ad groups, how to manage budgets and bids, coming up to speed slowly in a campaign, advertising excellence itself, landing page optimization best practices, reporting and interpreting the data, and testing and refinement. And we're going to cover some of those in detail and some of those at a pretty high level, just so you get a sense of the interconnectedness. Now, the interesting thing about David as well is that he has, in his agency, Clix Marketing, he runs it completely by the performance model. So he takes a percentage of the profits or a commission per sales lead generated. That's how his agency gets paid. So you can be sure that David knows how to run pay-per-click campaigns. He's also active in the SEMPO organization, Search Engine Marketing Professionals organization. That's how we connected. He's also an author of one of SEMPO's advanced search advertising courses. So he's really good at explaining how things work in the search world. He also writes a really good column that I've discovered in getting to know David called The Profitable PPC Column, and it's on Search Engine Watch. And I started reading it, and it was one of those things where time just was sucked away because I wanted to go back and read more and more and more of his articles. It's a really good resource, Profitable PPC. And he does a weekly radio show as well called PPC Rockstars on Webmaster Radio. You can also find it in iTunes. Just look up PPC Rockstars. So we have somebody really fantastic. I think you're going to learn a lot, and I'm kind of in love with him. I do a lot of kind of pre-work to get to know the people that I'm interviewing, and we have some really fun get to know David kinds of things at the end of the show that you'll have to stay tuned for too. He's super fun. So that being said, let's get him on. Welcome, David.
Wow, Susan, what very nice things to say, and I can only return the favor by saying that I just got off the phone with my mother. She's 82 years old, and she said that she thinks I've finally arrived because I'm being interviewed by you.
Aha!
You know, she literally said, I can die now.
You are too funny.
I'm serious.
Well, you know, it's funny. I love being an interviewer. I take it very seriously. You and I did a lot of prep for this show. And one of the things that I'm actually working on is an ebook that I'm going to launch in the next month or so that is essentially all my master interviewing techniques for preparation, for the in-interview process and what I do and how I approach it, as well as how I radiate my show. Because there are so many people who, you know, they give me good compliments, and I feel like I've kind of tried to really master the idea of being a great interviewer. And so anybody who wants to get on that mailing list for my announcement of the ebook, my Interviewing Techniques, Master Interviewing Techniques ebook, I encourage anyone who's listening to just send an email to me, Susan@PersonalLifeMedia.com, and I'll make sure you know when it comes out. So you and I, David, we're going to do the 10-cylinder engine of pay-per-click. So let's get rolling on that.
Okay.
First thing that you were really teaching me about PPC. I'm a newbie. I've been running a few campaigns, and I've realized that it's an overwhelming process. Even for people who have hired this out or for people who are doing it themselves, I absolutely know that you're going to lay out some great gems for us today. So I want to start with the thing you think is the very first step in putting together a PPC campaign, and that's customers. Tell us about your segmentation or your persona process.
Well, first of all, the 10-cylinder concept that I have to give you credit for pays tribute to the fact that in a PPC campaign that produces exceptional results, everything has to be running finely tuned up and running in parallel with excellence in each segment. Too many advertisers believe that if they get one thing right, like they pick the right keywords, then everything's going to be just fine. There's a big myth that bid management can be automated and everything will be just fine, and that's just not the case. And then the other kind of overview thing I wanted to say is that this is really just advertising. It's not mysterious. It's not overly technical. It's just a lot of it is advertising and marketing 101. And on my blog, I have a couple of good resources that I always recommend that beginners read first, like Scientific Advertising, which is a book that was written by Claude Hopkins in 1913 that really lays out the basics of any kind of direct response advertising. So in light of that, one of the things that we do with our clients, and everything I'm about to describe assumes that we're creating a brand new campaign from scratch.
Right.
But then goes into the steps that we go through to refine over time. So the first step that we go through with our clients is the same thing any advertising agency would do, and that is get to know the customers, get to know the customers of the client. And usually, and almost always, that customer set breaks down into smaller subsets. So we create what are called personas, which just says, let's identify the customer subsets and actually give them names, because what we're really after is how would they express their needs or desires that would result in a sale or a sales lead for our client. So we actually just sit down, we identify different customer segments, we give them names, and then we say, let's imagine the words they would use if they were doing a search that would ultimately result in a sale.
So whether it's this is soccer moms, or this is chief household officers, or this is married women, or whatever it is, each one of them, depending on the product, might have a very different need or a reason for desiring a solution.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Another example is the one I used when I wrote one of the lessons in SEMPO's paid search certification course. It's a helicopter skiing school, and there are some clients who are, you know, young snowboarders, and then there are other clients that are older people that are learning how to ski for the first time, and obviously they're going to use completely different words to express, you know, I want to go down the hill as fast as I can on one single plank versus, you know, start me out on the bunny slope, that kind of thing.
So once you have your customer segmentation, then you can begin the keyword research or the brainstorming sessions that you do. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, there's another misconception among especially new advertisers, and that is that there are some great keyword tools out there, and creating keyword lists is just a matter of plugging in some root words into these keyword tools, and the tools do the rest. I think they're used more as a crutch than as a augmentation. We start out with intuition. We basically use our knowledge of the customers that we had just defined, the words they would use, and then we start to string together words and phrases using the kinds of modifier words like adjectives and adverbs and prepositions and things to round out the keyword set. And then once we do that, and we've got lists of anywhere from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of words, then we go back to the keyword research tools, mainly as a way of verifying that we haven't missed anything important, which, you know, happens every now and then. But I would say that the keyword research tools, like the ones that are built into Google AdWords, for example, basically we probably come up with 5% of additional keywords to add to the mix. Whereas, again, there's a misconception that, an advertiser should start with 5% and then rely on the keyword research tools to supply the rest, and they're just not as smart as humans.
So you're collecting everything in an Excel spreadsheet.
That's
you're
right.
Brainstorming all these words. You're grouping them. Maybe is every tab on the spreadsheet a different group of words, for keywords for each persona?
Frequently, yes. That's exactly how it works. We have probably 6 to 8 columns, where the root words, usually nouns describing the product or service or the activity that the searcher might be looking for, and then the columns to the left and right of the root words are the modifying words.
Got it. Wow, it's a lot of work to get started. So David, you were telling me about something else, that when you're doing keyword research, you use this thing that's a concatenization tool. You use something called the permutator. What's concatenization? How does it work? And tell us about this tool.
Okay, so the permutator is a software tool from Boxer Software. I think it's $49.95, but worth much more than that in the amount of time it saves us. It literally lets us paste in up to five columns of words or phrases, and then it delivers, you push a button and it delivers literally every combination of those five columns of words. So that's how you get to the hundreds of thousands of keywords, hopefully including all of the different ways that people express their need or desire in their search.
Okay, so this is where you got your big list. You're still in a spreadsheet. Now, architecture, you're telling me that you've got the words you want to now figure out your campaign settings. Explain that at a really high level.
Okay, well, one way to conceptualize a pay-per-click campaign is it's really just an outline of words. And there are buckets, ultimate buckets called ad groups. That's what the keywords are poured into, and I'll talk more about ad groups in a second. But basically, the pay-per-click advertiser has to arrange these buckets underneath an outline that literally looks like an outline. There's a campaign, there's an account, and then underneath the account there are campaigns, and each campaign includes a series of ad groups. And coming up with the correct structure takes some planning. It doesn't really affect the performance of the campaign as much as it does allow the advertiser to keep track of where everything is sitting, where the ads are, where the keywords are, and then anticipates being able to generate reports based on this structure that are easy to read and interpret and act upon. The more important part of this step, though, is the campaign settings. Each of the search engines allow the advertiser to say, I want overall these things to happen. And those include geographic targeting, includes things like day parting, where you say, I only want my ads to appear during certain times of the day and days of the week. So these are overall settings that the advertiser really just sets once, but are very important for the performance of the campaign.
So I have my account, my helicopter skiing. I have campaigns. I've got a spring skiing, balls to the wall skiing, and grandma and grandpa skiing. And those are my campaigns. And then within that, I have ad groups. Is that right?
That's correct.
And what would an example of an ad group be for grandma and grandpa skiing?
Okay, very good example. It could be underneath that there's an ad group for grandma and grandpa beginner skiing, grandma and grandpa intermediate skiing, grandma and grandpa cross-country skiing. Okay, so the smaller units are more granular such that, and we're starting to get into the next cylinder here, such that the keywords in the list are very tightly associated with the ad copy. That's one of the biggest keys to success, and that is what the effect you want on the human being is they do a search. Any word that is associated with the product or service of the advertiser is anticipated such that the ad comes up when the search is done, and the ad should really nail the desire or need that the searcher was expressing in their search.
So if it says cross-country skiing in the text of the ad, it better say that when they land.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
That's the landing page optimization.
That's the landing page.
Okay.
That's a little bit downstream.
All right. So that's our ad groups. That's the tight groups of keywords around the verticalization of the personas.
Right.
Okay. Now let's go to budgets and bid management. Tell us how we pay for this stuff, how we manage not overpaying.
Right. Well, you just expressed it the correct way. In the campaign settings, one of these settings is how much do I want to spend as an advertiser for each of these campaigns within the overall account, it's called, which is really the biggest picture. So how much do I want to spend per day? And unfortunately, Google doesn't explain this very well, and many advertisers assume that means literally this is exactly how much I want to spend every day, when really it's more like a governor mechanism that says, if something goes crazy, I don't want to spend over this amount. So it's really just it's a break for overspending rather than an expression of exactly what I want to spend.
It's a governor rather than a limit, or not a limit, but like
a target.
Right. So a lot of times you're not hitting the limit.
That's correct. Yeah.
That's probably the biggest problem. You're not getting all the revenue you could on a daily basis. It's a perishable good, and
right.
the time slips by, and you didn't make your numbers because you're not hitting your limits.
Sure.
Okay.
And in fact, many advertisers spend, they don't get as many clicks per day as they could, and they don't even know it because they've set their budgets too low.
So how do you manage that? Do you set a really high limit and see how many you can get and then kind of get a sense on a monthly basis for where the top level is of the traffic?
Well, it really depends. When I write about it, I say that there are really kind of two endpoints in spending philosophy. And all of this relates, you know, to the real world. It's basically prudent and aggressive. If you're prudent, you start out slow and you build over time. You start out spending a smaller amount, a smaller budget per day, and you're getting the results back every day, and we'll talk more about interpreting results, but you're seeing what works and what doesn't, and you're increasing the spend on the portions of the campaign that are working, that you have data proving that it's working. Then the aggressive philosophy or strategy is we need to hit the ground running, we've got a big budget, we need to splash the world with our ads, and we can afford a little bit of, not waste, but, you know, think of it as testing money. We can afford some testing money to get the results back faster and therefore optimize faster so we hit the ground running and then we get to the point of assured ROI faster. So to answer your question, you know, how do you set the budgets? How do you decide what to spend? It really depends on what your strategy and philosophy is within those endpoints.
I would assume that for the most part, people are more conservative and they want to do things slowly. There's another reason that you've explained to me to do a campaign very slowly, and that's the Google slap. Take us there.
Yeah, this is a strange thing. Google's got all of these really great algorithms that regulate whose ad gets to appear on the search page and which ad might be higher than another ad. And they try to, it's partially an auction model, but it's also partially rewarding good behavior. In other words, Google's overall philosophy for the natural search results as well as the ads is the relevant results should be rewarded because Google wants the searcher to have the most relevant possible result to really nail their intent when they were doing the search. So I won't go into a lot of detail about why this happens, but here's what happens. When a brand new account is opened, let's say advertiser has never done pay-per-click advertising before, the account is, to some extent, proven guilty before it earns its innocence. In other words, Google wants to make sure that the advertiser is not a spammer or a scammer. They tell the truth and they offer good results. So they start on an account with a little bit of a handicap. And that's especially true for any keywords for which Google doesn't have any history across its system. Those would be keywords that are proper names or keywords that are not in general use or what are called long tail terms that are five or six words in length that are searched on very infrequently. So basically Google says this entire account, this advertiser in essence, needs to prove that it's worthy of you know, we call it Google love juice, and that's I'm going to use a word that I haven't used yet because I don't think it's as mysterious as it's made out to be. It's called quality score. So the account or the advertiser is assumed to deserve a low quality score until it proves that it can attain a better one. And to make this already too long story short, the best practice is to, with a new account, turn it on gradually and turn on the parts of the account that should get the best quality score. And that's the parts of the account that have the most common search terms and the most relevance to the ad and the landing page and the products and services of the advertiser. So really just turn it on slowly, lead with your best, highest volume portions of the account, let it run for X weeks, sometimes it takes months, and then turn it on full bore. And then that avoids what some people call the Google PPC slap.
That makes sense. How long do you think it takes at a minimum to get that Google quality score?
Well, it depends entirely on the velocity of the campaign. That is, how many clicks are coming in per day.
Okay.
It's going to be at least a week, could be up to 2 months.
Wow, that's a long time.
Sure.
Okay. I want to take a break now, but I'm going to go back. When we come back, I want to go back to the prices people are paying for clicks. I'm interested in actual numbers. And then we're going to finish off our 10-cylinder engine by covering advertising excellence, how you write a good ad, what makes a good ad, landing pages, so how you connect the ads and the landing pages. Of course, that affects your quality score, right?
Yep.
Reporting and interpreting the data, and then testing and refinement and some recommendations you have for that, some things that work that are very effective for these campaigns. So we'll take a break. I want to thank my sponsors. They let me have this fun and educate the world with all your knowledge. So you are getting to know David Zatella. He's the owner and CEO of Clicks Marketing. That's CLIX Marketing. And he has offices in Louisville, Kentucky, Chicago, and New York. And I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Stay tuned. We'll be back to learn more about pay-per-click campaign excellence.
Hey, this is Sean Daly, host of Green Talk Radio. Green Talk helps you navigate the maze of green and eco products on the market today and make smarter lifestyle choices at home and at work through informative and entertaining interviews with industry authors and experts, as well as executives from innovative companies around the world. Find Green Talk Radio on iTunes or at personallifemedia.com. Green Talk Radio, environmental stewardship through smart consumption. Green Talk Radio.
We're back, and we're with David Zatella. He's the owner and CEO of Clicks Marketing, and we're talking about this idea of the 10-cylinder engine, that if they're not all running and not all working and not all firing, your car's not going to go forward. So, David, before we get on to the next cylinder of ad excellence, go back to the bid and bid management. What's the cheapest I can get clicks for? What's the average that people are paying? How does all that work? Give us numbers.
Well, theoretically, the lowest price that an advertiser could pay per click is 1 cent. That rarely happens. But let me cover very briefly a topic that's related and very important. That is, when advertisers are deciding how much they want to pay for keywords, they should pay less attention to what the competition is paying and more attention to what's the price that's going to yield them an acceptable to great return on their ad spend. Or return on investment.
How do you find out what a competitor is paying? Is there a way to look that up?
Yeah, there are research tools within the search engines themselves and outside the search engines that give the advertiser a pretty good idea.
What are they? Give us a name for Google.
The keyword research tool.
And it tells you how much other people are paying?
It tells you what the range is.
Oh, right. Yeah. I know where that is. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And that's a pretty good indicator. And it certainly will tell you whether the keyword that you're planning on including in your campaign is getting an average of 5 cents, 40 cents, $10, or $100. That's certainly important to know. But the point I'm trying to make is too many advertisers start out believing that they need to be guided by what everyone else is doing. And the point they should really start at is, what's the acceptable price to pay in order to reach a target or maximum cost per sale? And to do that, they have to be tracking conversions. That's a whole other topic and very important. Every advertiser should be tracking using the search engine's native conversion tracking. They should be tracking conversions.
What is the search engine's native conversion? How do I tell which keywords are converting for me? I can tell when I get a sale. How do I track that back to the keyword that got clicked on?
Well, the search engines provide for free very valuable conversion tracking, which means that advertiser does a one-time operation on their site. They take a little chunk of JavaScript and put it on the thank you page of their site. And from then on, Google accumulates statistics every time someone does a sale that has started out with the pay-per-click ad. So at any given time, the advertiser, and we're starting to get into the reporting thing here, an advertiser can pull a report that says, show me over the past 2 weeks how many conversions I've gotten, and which keywords those conversions are related to, and exactly how much did I spend, how much did I spend per click, how much did I spend per conversion, what my conversion rate was, just, you know, fantastic data.
Got it. Okay, I took you off course. I just want a number, David. Give me some numbers. I want just like, what are typical things that your clients are paying on the low end, the mid end, and the high end?
Boy, okay. So on the low end, 11 to 25 cents.
Okay. And are those for like really esoteric long phrases or?
Not necessarily. Okay. It really depends on a lot of several different factors. One is the competitive landscape. There are some keywords for which over 500 ads are triggered. That's, you know, the very, very competitive industries like financial services, loans, beauty products, you know, things that where there are literally hundreds of competitors. Those are the keywords where the minimum cost per click just to show your ad on a page is relatively high.
What's relatively high? Number-wise?
You know, the most extreme example, I think, is the word mesothelioma, which is a cancer condition that's caused by asbestos poisoning or something. And the top competitors that are bidding on that term are paying $100 per click because, you know, even if they have a 1% conversion rate, it's very likely that they'll recover that investment because the payoff in the suit will be very high.
It's personal injury attorneys.
Exactly.
But your clients, what are your clients paying on average for a converted click, someone who ends up buying their product?
Well, you know, it really depends. I mean, we have clients all over the map whose profitability is all over the map. So we have clients in the retail space where their margins are razor thin. And then we have some in the software space where their margins are huge. I guess I would have to say the ranges are 25 cents to $7 or so per click.
Okay. All right. That's reasonable. Thank you.
Sure.
You knew I wasn't going to stop asking you till I got some, got some numbers.
Tenacity.
That's me. I got to go look at my license plate. I'll be right back. Oh, here I am. So ad excellence. How do I write a good ad? What are the, you just had one thing you wrote about it. Was it on Search Engine Watch where you had the little characters, like the extra characters? That was a new thing I learned about from you. Tell me how I write a really good ad that people click on.
Well, you know, this is one of the most misunderstood areas because, you know, especially on my blog, I have a couple of blog posts that offer these free resources. And it basically, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek says, hey, all of you young Turks and Turkettes, you know, you just got your MBA, you're in a new ad agency, you think you know it all, you probably don't, you know, just go back and do some fundamental homework. And that's where I offer this scientific advertising book for free. And another one I offer for free, actually two books I think, are all about writing classified ads. You remember classified ads?
Yes, the oldie days.
Exactly. And there was a body of knowledge built up over years about the art and science of writing tiny ads. And, you know, there are fundamentals that should not be ignored and are ignored by people that just don't get the advertising part of all this. So a great ad contains as much as possible benefits rather than features, because benefits resonate with a person more so than features do. So benefits means how is the person going to feel? How is the potential customer going to feel once they have bought or availed themselves of the product or service? So, for example, a feature in a beauty product would be goes on smoothly, but the benefit is you will be stared at by thousands of men. So that's feature versus benefit, and that's one of the most neglected best practices. Typically, the ads we see that are amateurish are just basically we sell widgets, come and get our widgets, or not even even the come and get part. We sell widgets, blue ones, red ones, green ones, and obviously, there's no benefit there, and there's also no call to action. Basically, most advertisers don't realize that people will more likely take the action you want them to take if you tell them exactly what they should do. So if you are directing the ad to a site that asks for the visitor to fill out a lead sheet, fill in their email address and their name, then tell them that in the ad. You know, fill out the form for a free quote now, exclamation point. And that ad is much more likely to attract the click and get the conversion than one that just sits there and says, we have this to offer, period.
Okay, so benefit-oriented and tell them what you want them to do.
Yes.
Not just a call to action, but more like instructional.
Exactly.
Okay, what else? Any other thing that's really important for an ad?
Well, I've written about dozens of little tricks. The advertiser should test different capitalization, different wording of the same concepts. The keyword in the ad will get a better response than if the keyword is not in the ad. So very obviously, intuitively obviously, if the searcher does a search on helicopter skiing in Colorado, if the ad says, come see our wide selection of dates for helicopter skiing in Colorado, it's much, much more likely to get the click.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. Any other big things before we move on? Any other big things for ad excellence?
Well, one whole category pertains to a section of pay-per-click advertising that is underutilized because it seems to be very scary, and that's content advertising, where ads appear not on the search results page, but on website pages where the website owner has chosen to try to make some money by displaying advertising.
Well, yeah, and you can go in and actually pick the websites you want.
Exactly.
And people aren't doing that? Everyone's not doing
that? No. Unfortunately, the search engines have never done a good job of helping advertisers understand how very different that the strategies and tactics are for advertising on the content network compared to the search network. In fact, they make it difficult to even distinguish between the two because every new campaign that is created lumps the two together when they really should never be lumped together.
So in your ad group, so you'd have a campaign, but then in your ad groups, you might have an ad group that's grandma, grandpa, beginner for search, and then grandma, grandpa, beginner for display.
Exactly.
Okay, and what do you call those things? Like, what do you call it when you're on Google versus on their display ad network?
Contextual advertising or advertising on the content network.
Content network.
Yeah.
Okay. So you'd even have groups for that.
Oh, definitely.
So how do you write the ad for the content network?
Okay. Well, I did a 33-week column on Search Engine Watch just about content advertising. And there were at least three columns just on writing ads and designing ads because you can do display ads and video ads as well. The major point, though, is the ads have to be very different because the person that's seeing the ad is not looking at it in response to starting out some research using a search engine.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the ad has to jump off the page and distract attention away from the content of the web pages, which is why they came in the first place. And then it has to be much more loud, much more flashy. I mean, Within boundaries of good taste, of course, you know, I mean, it depends on the context, but it has to be much more noticeable and much more direct than a search ad can afford to be.
What makes it more noticeable and direct? How would you write it?
Well, if it's a text ad, then loud words work well. Any imperatives work well. Get, buy, see with an exclamation point. Those tend to jump off the page. Gut-level, emotional, what I call in the articles, Malthusian messages work well. Like, your neighbors will salivate with greed over your new outdoor furniture. Really hitting at the gut level.
Still a benefit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I ask you too many questions. We have to get to landing pages. And, you know, we did Tim Ash. You said he's one of your top three people that you look up to in the
Absolutely.
Industry. So we did a whole landing pages thing. Is there anything that you want to say about landing pages in context of our conversation today?
Sure. Tim's book, which is The Bible, Landing Page Optimization, goes into a lot of detail that I believe every advertiser, every site owner should read. There are a couple main points that are easily understood. One of them is, in the context of the PPC campaign, the landing page had better reflect or match the keywords and the ad text. The way Tim puts it is, you're making a promise with the ad, you need to fulfill that promise on the landing page. Too many advertisers neglect this, and a person does a search, clicks in an ad, they get to a page, and they're like lost in the wilderness. They get to the home page, or they get to a page that basically says, you've got to start your search all over again, because we're not going to tell you we're not going to point you at what you were looking for. So in the perfect world, the landing page immediately lets the visitor immediately draw the conclusion, this is exactly where I wanted to be. It's what I expected, and it's what I wanted when I did the search.
Helicopter in for cross-country skiing in Colorado.
Exactly. And, and it's not just the words, but those words, that millisecond of time it should take for the person to make the conclusion they've come to the right place, that's got to happen in the upper left-hand corner of the page, because that's where the eye starts to read the page. And if it doesn't happen in the upper left-hand corner of the page, then it's going to take some time to find it somewhere on the page, so that even if it's included somewhere on the page but not the upper left-hand corner, the telephone rings, and the baby cries, the boss walks in the office, and the person leaves the site forever.
Okay. And what about reporting? How do we sift through all this crap that we've created and know where we are?
Well, you know, this is one of the biggest strengths of pay-per-click advertising. Basically, the advertiser can slice and dice the data very, very easily and see exactly what's happening day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, hour-to-hour even. And standard reports show the advertiser at the keyword level or at the ad level or at the ad group level, any level, the number of impressions, the number of clicks, the click-through rate, the clicks over the impressions, the price that's being paid per click, average, maximum, the number of conversions that have resulted, the cost per conversion, the conversion percentage, you know, all this fantastic data that informs the advertiser exactly what has happened, and especially guides them to, okay, what can I do to make this better?
Okay. Are there any other reporting tools you use than the ones that come from Google or from the other search engines themselves?
Sure. I think every professional advertiser uses at least two tools. One is the reporting that's available through the search engine, and then the other is a separate analytics package, web analytics package, that goes into more depth, more detail about what happens when visitors get to the site, which pages do they visit, how many different pages do they visit before they make a sale. Probably the most common one is Google Analytics, which is a free package that I'm going to guess 80% of all site owners use.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are packages that are third-party and often much more expensive that have capabilities that go far beyond Google Analytics.
Got it. So that's a good indication if you're having conversion problems that people are landing and bouncing. There's no,
Absolutely.
You know, they're not going anywhere. You're not delivering against it.
Yes.
All right. Last one is testing and refinement. What do you want to tell us about that?
Well, first of all, testing and refinement is something that's completely foreign to many advertisers, especially ones that didn't come up through the ranks of direct response advertising, because the non-direct response or branding advertiser thinks about their campaign in terms of, I placed the ad in the magazine, I'm on to the next year's planning. They don't really stop to say or measure what were the results of that advertisement and how can that guide my next action. Whereas a direct response advertiser constantly looks at the results of the most recent campaign and says, okay, what can I change to improve the results next time I run a campaign? In the direct mail world, this is a process that happens kind of in fits and starts over a very long period of time. You get data for the last mailing a month later, and then you make changes to the envelope copy, the color of the hero shots, and the number and style of the fields in the coupon. Whereas in pay-per-click advertising, it's like direct response on steroids. So you're constantly getting a flow of data that's telling you, for example, this advertisement is performing better than this advertisement. So one of the best practices is in every ad group, always be running two advertisements, one which is the control of the most recent winner, and one is a variation or a brand new ad that is being tested against the control. We do the same thing with landing pages. We're constantly testing landing pages to see, I'll give you an example. Google has a great free tool within Google AdWords called Website Optimizer that lets an advertiser basically set up 25 to 35 variations of a landing page. Google runs them all simultaneously and comes back and says not only which page produced the best results, but which combination of elements, headline, hero shot, button color, which combination of elements will produce the best results.
Yeah, that's great. It's amazing that they have so many interconnected and excellent tools
Absolutely.
That they offer. Yeah. Well, they're so successful. And thank you for going through the 10 cylinders. It's such a huge thing, man. It's like a black hole. It could suck you in and this could be the only thing that you do. Thank
it
God
is.
There's companies like Lix Marketing that you can outsource it to, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And you're growing. You've just opened another couple offices, which is great, too.
Yep. We're coming to a town near you.
Yay. That sounds good. I'm
yeah,
glad.
San Francisco.
And you just wrote a book. It's coming out. It'll be out about the time that this episode debuts for the Dishy Mix listeners. And
that's right. Tell
us about the book.
The book is exclusively about the part of PPC advertising that I mentioned a second ago, which is little understood, and that's contextual advertising.
Now, describe what contextual advertising is as compared to other things.
It's simply ads that appear not on the search results page, but on the pages of sites where the site owner wants to make some money with advertising. So that can be text ads, it can be static display ads, it can be animated flash ads, everything all the way through full motion video ads.
Very so it's powerful. The content network. It's Google's
yes.
content network.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be text ads. It can be display or it can be video ads.
That's right.
And is there a thing in Google that lets you create video ads now?
You know, Google just came out with a really powerful tool within Google AdWords. It's called Display Ad Builder.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, these guys are so smart. It lets the advertiser create very high production value ads. Some static ads, but mostly flash ads and video ads. So basically, if the advertiser has a up to 30-second video clip, they can create an ad that has a very high quality, high production value, start, finish, call to action, all the little controls within the ad to let the viewer start and stop and pause it. And you know, it takes 15 seconds to upload the ad and create and start running a professional video ad.
That is so fantastic. I'm going to go check that out today.
True.
So your book is called Customers Now.
Yes.
Okay. And you were kind enough to give us two free copies, personally autographed for Dishy Mix fans.
That's right.
I love that. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
All you have to do to get one of David's books, Customers Now, all about contextual advertising, is to go to DishyMixFan.com, which is my Facebook fan club, and join the fan club and post that you would like to be one of the people that gets a free copy of Customers Now about contextual advertising written by David. And I and David will choose two lucky winners and he'll personally autograph it and mail it to you. So even if you don't want the book, join the Dishy Mix fan club because we've got swagalicious deliciousness 24/7.
Swag is icing on a great cake.
Swagalicious. I love that. That's so great. Well, congratulations. It is damn hard to write a book. I'm writing the, you know, master interviewing ebook right now, and it's a lot of work,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah. It's terrifying. And I'm
terrifying.
Actually negotiating to, I may be signing a contract next week to write a huge book for a huge publisher. And,
good.
You know, I'm the fear is palpable.
Yeah, but you should definitely do it because you are
sure.
a prolific writer. I mean, 33 articles on how to write a good ad. I mean, your work, really what you should do is you should take all those blog posts that you've done, all those articles that you've written and turn that into a book, cohesively turn that into a book because it's kind of a pain in the butt to go on to all, you know, go onto the site and click, 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 click.
Sure.
I would like that in an ebook that I could download.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing along those lines. I've become obsessed with Twitter over the past 7 weeks only. And so I have anointed myself the ultimate editor of high quality information about online advertising on Twitter. And I find all the best articles and I retweet them. And then I have a little piece of software, free software, that collects all of my tweets every day and publishes them as one big blog post at the end of the day.
Oh, that's clever. What's the piece of software you use?
Oh, boy. I can't remember.
Okay. It's well, if you remember, let us know.
Yeah.
I'll post it.
Okay.
I'll tweet it. I'll retweet it for you.
You
well, that's great. So how can people follow you on Twitter?
My Twitter handle is @Zetella, S-Z-E-T-E-L-A.
Spell it again.
S-Z-E-T-E-L-A.
Great. Thanks for picking the hard one, your name.
Yeah, sure.
And but you're supposed to use your name, which is good. And tell us the name of your blog, because we've mentioned it a couple of times, but it's good for that people will want to go there.
Yeah, it's the Clicks Marketing PPC blog. It is clicksmarketing.com/blog, and that's clixmarketing.com/blog.
That's excellent. All right. Well, that's really good. If you want to follow Susan Bratton, I'm at Susan Bratton on Twitter and DigiMixFan.com on Facebook. And I have one last little thing for you, David. You've been so kind to give us so much great information and to take us through the whole process in a linear way. That's been awesome. And to provide so many resources on the web for us, too. I'll make sure that when your episode comes out, that all the links to all the places that you post are there. And then if you've enjoyed listening to David today, you can also listen to him every week on PPC Rockstars on webmasterradio.fm, or you can just go into iTunes and search on PPC Rockstars and you'll be able to hear him. But this is what I wanted to leave you with today, David. You told me that the animal that you would like to be if you weren't David Zetella was a hummingbird. And I thought you would like to know what that symbolizes, what that choice symbolizes. Would you like to know?
Sure.
It's so perfect for you. I can't believe how perfect it is for you. The hummingbird is the symbol of joy, but it's also the symbol that means lighten up. Have you ever seen images of the laughing Buddha or the laughing Jesus? Well, these spiritual masters and many others knew that life was not to be taken all that seriously. Life is a very transitory and fleeting thing, and although we may interpret events in our life as requiring solemnity, they're usually not that big a deal. There's such precious little time on this beautiful planet. Make every moment count. Love, and then go and love some more, no matter what else is going on. The hummingbird is a symbol for flexibility, sensitivity, vibration, and color.
Cool.
Isn't that neat? That's my Power Animal Oracle cards by Stephen Farmer. He's the Power Animal Spirit Guide dude that I love. I've got all his card decks and his books and things because I always like to see what animal people identify with. So yours is about fun.
I really appreciate that. I'm gonna encapsulate that clip, what you just said, and I'm gonna play it as foreplay with my wife.
There you go. Well, we'll see. She'll say, "Okay, little hummingbird, I'll vibrate with you." I'll enter my aura of colors with yours.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, David, we've taken everyone's time up so much today. And if they're still with us, it's awesome because they wanted to hear everything you had to say to make their 10-cylinder PPC engine run. And I really appreciate you, all the preparation that you did with me to be so smooth at telling everybody the story today.
My pleasure, Susan. I'm really, really grateful to you and your listeners.
Well, I am grateful to my listeners too, and to you, David. So thank you so much for tuning in to Dishy Mix today. You've gotten to know David Zetella. He's the owner and CEO of Clicks Marketing, prolific author, has a new book, and you should follow him on Twitter at Zetella. That's S-Z-E-T-E-L-A. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. I hope I'll see you next week. Have a great day. Bye.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.